Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, we've got Zach and Ian. We're going to talk about Iron Man 3, which has just broke over $1 billion, which to me is insane. I can't believe
it. $1 billion worldwide.
That's a huge deal.
By the time it came out in America, it had already made 300 overseas or something like that.
Oh, my gosh. So they released it overseas first?
They released it for a week early overseas, yeah.
That's weird. Is
that
a new thing?
They've been doing that very recently, like within the last year with big blockbuster stuff.
That seems dumb.
No, I don't think
spoilers
it is.
Spoilers is going to get even worse.
Well, nobody cares about spoilers anymore, Ian.
That's true. I guess they don't, because it's like everybody gets a pre-release on everything nowadays. So, like, if you check your websites, because you want to keep up on what's coming up, and you want
there are no trailers that don't show you the beginning, middle, and end of every movie.
That pretty much, but sometimes they show you the end at the beginning of the trailer.
We watched Furious 6 recently.
Yeah,
Furious 6. You knew that in the end of the movie, Vincent Diesel was going to drive a car through the front of the plane to escape.
That's true.
As it crashed.
You didn't know that was going to be the end part, but
you knew that was going to be the end. What if that happened in the beginning?
I thought it could happen in the middle, man.
No, what?
I thought the tank thing might be the end.
No.
I thought...
That's ridiculous. The tank thing had to be the second thing.
You think plane is Trump's tank in all
huge,
cases?
Yeah.
Okay, that's huge. True. You're probably... You got me there. Okay.
You know, Seth mentioned how long that runway was.
I mentioned, I was
thinking about it, and that whole last sequence takes like half an hour.
It's
so
huge.
That runway had to be like...
And they didn't start at the beginning of the runway.
No, they didn't. That runway had to be like... close to 70 or 80 miles long.
I don't think that, but I think realistically it's...
That army base...
was probably... They were probably going like 27, 20... They probably weren't going 200 miles an hour. They were probably going... Because that plane wasn't going that fast.
How fast is a massive jumbo jet going when it's trying to take off?
Well, that wasn't even a jumbo. That was like a C-30 or whatever they're called.
It was huge. They were talking about how big it was. It was like the world's biggest
plane.
It's
probably going like, I don't know. I couldn't tell you, but it's probably going about the equivalent of 50, 55 miles an hour.
It's fast enough that people falling off cars just get swallowed up by the earth.
Yeah, it was hardcore. Anyway, we're not talking about Fast 6 or Furious 6. We already did that podcast. That podcast is already posted. We were talking about...
Remember when The Rock was on top of one of those cars, and then he saw that a barrier was coming, so he just jumped off of the car and rolled, and that car was going like 80 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah. That was
so
good.
If in the physics of this, and the laws of physics in the Furious 6 world...
If they're normalized
all the way through, that means that him jumping off an 80 mile an hour car over barrier and rolling and popping up shooting is no big deal, then they must have been going at least twice that fast for people to fall off the tops of cars and just be swallowed up by the earth, like I just said. I'm going to keep saying that they were swallowed up by the earth.
Into the darkness, yes. Well, I mean, it's all... Who knows? We'll see what happens in Furious 7.
Oh my gosh. You keep saying that like I'm going to be proven wrong about something, but you know you're not right.
I think we'll find out. I think if they're gutsy, ballsy...
He would be... They're not gutsy and ballsy. They don't own the rights to that character.
I don't know about that. Do you think they could buy the rights to that character? Do you think that they're not a stronger franchise than the other one?
No, they could.
Both franchises would be elevated.
Listen, who developed the transporter? What studio?
Isn't that one of those Lionsgate ones?
Lionsgate's tiny. They really are.
But they are making a lot of money.
So they're doing okay. Would you want to hold on to the rights?
You wouldn't sell the rights off, but
listen, the Transformer series. That series is a cash cow.
Yeah.
It prints money.
Right.
The Transformer series prints money.
Well, here's what I'm trying to figure out, though.
People all over the world
because
wake
we
up
already
every day
know
and they wonder, what's happening with Frank right now?
Frank's been in 4 movies so far.
Frank popped up
in Collateral.
Yes.
That's right. Now, was Collateral Lionsgate?
Well, here's the thing.
It was Collateral Lionsgate.
Here's the thing.
Was Collateral
here's the thing.
Lionsgate.
I don't believe so, no.
Okay.
However.
Did he deliver information to a hitman that was going to kill people in Collateral? Does that then demonstrate that maybe Frank's a fucking criminal?
No, because this was probably set before when he didn't open packages.
Possibly.
Right?
Yeah, it's believable.
It was set when he didn't open packages.
But
he just delivered stuff.
He knew he didn't.
Okay. No, he didn't. Okay. He had to set a suitcase down and then pick up another one and leave.
Was he dressed like Transporter?
He was dressed similar to Transporter.
He had a hat on and everything.
He didn't have a hat on.
Brad had his goofy fishing hat on in that.
No, he didn't. He was dressed like some Transporter. in the end of Furious 6, in the credit sequence of Furious 6, he pops out of a car.
And Seth was saying he looked Parker-esque.
He looked more like Parker. He had a huge 10-gallon cowboy hat on and a fake mustache.
No, but
he was wearing like an Old Navy pullover with a half zip-up fleece neck. Right. Mock turtleneck deal with jeans.
Look like a fan of Manchester United or something.
No, I don't think they dressed that Natalie. that's how he looked when he popped out. Frank, the Frank I know, wouldn't be caught dead in that. The one time that whole series he has to wear anything else, that's not true.
It's when he's fishing.
The third or fourth time he in that whole series he didn't wear anything. So in the first movie, they swim into the neighbor's house after his house gets blown up, right? And he has to wear whatever the neighbor had in there. And so he wears a...
like a Hawaiian shirt or something.
No, he wears a blue polo shirt. And for some reason, it's always bothering me. That's why I remember it. He buttons it all the way up.
That's right. That is bothering me.
It's really strange. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Especially with someone who probably in his real life just goes around mostly shirtless and clothesless entirely. I imagine when he goes to the store, he's like, well, let's see what I'm going to take off before I leave me car. And then then he pulls off his pants and maybe his shirt and then that just wears like a little bow tie and then goes in.
That makes no sense. None of this has anything to do with Iron Man 3. And it's all spoiler for Furious 6. But we've already.
But when he's working, when he's doing anything, when he's doing and that means saving saving women, fighting bad guys, whatever he's doing,
right?
If it's
when it's a job,
not necessarily a job because it is no longer a job. Multiple times in that series, and he just goes out and does anywhere. He's always wearing the suit.
Doing it though.
When he's relaxing, no suit. But this wasn't a relaxing thing. He was going out to kill a guy for a purpose. He would have been wearing the suit, right?
It's not a job. It's personal now.
See, it was personal at several points.
It became personal.
It became personal at several points in every single movie.
Because he was in the middle of the job.
Listen, how many Transporter movies are there? Five?
Three.
Six?
Three.
There's three.
Three.
And in all of them, it became personal at some point.
Right.
He didn't stop and put on his Old Navy pullover in any of those.
No.
Or jeans.
No. He didn't take a break from his jobs to go take care of something personal, and therefore, you know.
You can't assume because an actor is in every movie that he's playing the same character in.
I know.
You can't assume that.
But.
Are we to assume that Farmer?
In a driving car-related movie, who's the only other character.
He drives cars in every movie.
Yeah, but he's only, like, given his expertise as a driver specifically.
Wrong.
In that one.
Wrong. Death Race.
Death Race is not.
Death Race.
So much
he's
about
a driver.
Expertise is the driver.
Yeah, no, he was a driver.
Right,
was...
and is it believable? Death Race is set in the future. It's a sci-fi movie.
What else? What else was he in about cars and junk?
About cars? What do you mean, like Italian Job?
Italian
or
Job. He's a driver.
He's Handsome Dan. Is that what you're saying?
He's Handsome Rob.
Handsome Rob.
You don't know anything about Statham, do you? You don't know his characters' names.
I know Bank Job. I know Entropy.
Bank Job's a good movie.
Or not Entropy, but Chaos.
Chaos in the Flesh.
Chaos. I've seen more Statham movies than you. I own Return of the King, the Dungeon Seas tale.
Which Pixar movie does he play a voice in? Tell me that.
Probably one I haven't seen, because I've only seen like three of them.
It doesn't exist. It was a trick question.
Right. Well, there you go. So I was right, too.
Yeah, how many of them haven't you seen?
Most of them I have. I'm not going to see the new one. I don't think Pixar's got a good one left. I think Wall-E.
You're not going to see Monsters University?
Monsters University?
Monsters, Inc. is a great movie.
Maybe.
See Monsters, Inc.?
Monsters University is probably...
How do we know that?
Because it looks...
Listen, has John Goodman ever...
John Goodman ever, elevates everything he's
has
in.
Has he ever been in a movie that was not at least 5 stars out of 5?
John Goodman elevates everything he's in. Like a Morgan Freeman.
Remember King Ralph?
I love King Ralph. That's
you remember,
a great movie. That's
remember
a movie
that one
matters.
where he takes over? That's not a movie that matters.
King Ralph?
It's a terrible movie. Remember that ugly whore that he hooks up with?
Chambermaid
or whatever
British
she is? Or,
no, she
works
stripper.
In a diner. A stripper?
I think she was a stripper.
I don't know, whatever. She was gross.
Yeah.
What's that one where he takes over the Matinee?
Yeah.
Matinee is pretty bad, too.
Matinee, that was a Joe Dante, man.
Oh, great. Oh.
What an odd.
Let's go ahead and praise.
About the fear of the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Let's go ahead and just pretend that every movie that a certain director that we like is good, huh? How about
I'm
that?
I'm just saying that it's, hey... Matinee's
you know what was really good, and I love the director, Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3, that's right. Long Way Around the Train. Shane Black, written and directed. It's
Don't you think that in Furious 6 there were several points where they could have given The Rock something more action-packed to do?
More action-packed?
Think about this. This is one of the things that happened in the film. He goes to the CCTV.
Yeah, and shakes that guy's hand.
And he crushes a guy's hand for a minute just to show him that he's not going to put up with his nonsense anymore. But it's not nonsense that really matters to the film.
No.
It was a space-filling scene. Yeah. And that's what they use The Rock in?
It's kind of wasteful.
Have you seen his physique? He should be busting people's heads.
I think the problem was, they had so many people, and they did give most characters an arc. And then you throw in Gia Carano, and the more I think
She's
about
good.
It...
I like her.
The more... Yeah, I liked her too, but the more I think about it, the more how dumb it is that, like, that fight scene that they got it, that was an awesome fight scene.
And they're on the same team.
But, yeah, it's like...
But
Letty didn't know that, but why would Carano even put up a fight when there's no one else there to witness it? She could have put up much less of a fight, you know what I mean, than she did. Like, she was actually, seemed like she was really going to capture her.
But
and
it
that
doesn't
make any
hey,
sense.
Don't,
it's dumb.
Listen, don't hurt your head over it.
I'm not.
It's not, but listen, this is a movie where you know what happened in it. You know what happened, you know the physics of the things that happened in
right.
it and the logic.
Yeah.
And the lady telling her, the father of her newborn child, listen, you should go on this dangerous journey because that's what our family does.
Right.
We'll be fine.
It's about family.
So knowing that, you probably shouldn't worry too much about things like that. I think that just makes the experience richer. When things like that happen, it makes the experience richer.
Right, exactly. Okay, so Iron Man 3. I think... I was never really... I don't know what I expected for this.
The Rock, in fact, Furious 6... He's like he's the worst cop in the history of any film.
Well, also, what the fuck is his department in real life supposed to be?
You
I forget.
Swore again. You're swearing.
I did.
All these.
You know what? I couldn't.
You're
but
swearing
I didn't.
All these.
I didn't.
You did.
I didn't
you,
hear it though.
Oh my
I'm not.
Gosh,
I'm you, not. I'm gonna give. I'm gonna zero it out because here's the thing. I plowed through a lot of that to edit it quickly, and I didn't listen to every second. And I was like, you know what? At this point, I'm just gonna zero it out.
Jeff will tell us.
Well, no, I might have edited out the F-bomb because I cut a handful of stuff.
Jeff Phillips, please twispond to this question. Did Ian swear in the Furious 6 podcast? Did he swear with the F-bomb? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, right, yeah, so you're right. They didn't give The Rock enough to do in that.
But no, but he's just a terrible cop. So the fifth one. At least he wanted to, he was trying to catch these guys. You got to catch them.
Mm-hmm.
You got to stop the crime. He allows the crime to happen. By the end, you know he's a bad cop because he allows it to happen. And he kind of looks the other way where they take like $100 billion, whatever it was. How much money was it?
Did they each get $100 million?
They got something huge.
So it was probably like $800 million or something like that then.
And then in the second one, he goes to these criminals and he says, I need you to help me catch these other criminals.
Bigger fish.
Right.
It's like a domestic
However,
terror.
However, he even, lets the bigger fish go at many times. If he really cared, he would have shot Luke Evans or whatever his name is when he had the sniper dot on him. Who cares if he kills Vin Diesel?
That's
they don't
true.
Have... Why do they have to have a code with each other?
Yeah, there was a lot of flaws.
All Vin Diesel ever did to him was beat him.
Yeah.
He beat him physically...
And then
in a fight that shouldn't have been allowed to happen. They should have had The Rock just beat his ass.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because Vin Diesel could not hang with him.
No.
Vin Diesel is maybe 6 feet tall if he's wearing Tim Curry's shoes from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay.
And The Rock is like fully like 6'6" and like 273 pounds of pure muscle.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever else is in there.
Right.
Along with the muscle.
Right.
He's just a terrible cop. It's the humor of this whole series for me, the thing that makes it better, makes it a richer experience, if you will, just like I said before, is that the ineptitude of The Rock and him being this new force in it, this utterly inept guy who's always in like those pants that have those like puffy pockets with buttons on them so you can pull out like smoke bombs and stuff. So
cargo
he can disappear.
Pants
not necessarily cargo pants. He's got like the military pants on that are like strapped down. He's got guns and stuff strapped all over. Like he wears those everywhere. He wears it to go to their house in LA at the end of the movie.
He looks like Roadblock, basically.
He does look a lot like Roadblock. Did you watch that movie?
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't watch
I'll check it out.
Maybe eventually. So, Iron Man 3?
Yeah, Iron Man 3. Go for it.
So, better than the second one. Shane Black infused his own sense to it, but kept all the stuff that was working about the
Another thing they could have done in Furious 6 was this. So, they kill off the really hot chick that Han was going with, and they didn't have to, because You want a reason to not feel bad that Han dies. Mm-hmm. So if he's despondent and like my life's over, what's the point of even living anymore? And then you see him go out in a crazy crash. Cool. So that's all right. But since he's dying anyway, why not keep the hot chick? Don't let her die. That gives a little more...
The chronology screwball then. Then there has to be some bad breakup between them in order to justify her not being the third one.
Good point. That was the whole problem. Okay. But here's my issue. Does anyone like Jordana Brewster anymore?
I don't know.
I thought she was hot when I was like 18. I thought she was so hot.
You don't think she's hot anymore?
She's okay. Older? She kind of looks like Mariel Hemingway now.
I don't think she looks a little bony. All like Mariel.
A little bony is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, bony? Okay.
So they should have killed her.
To make it personal for Brian?
Oh my gosh. Wouldn't that be awesome? And then you could hook him up with a new hot chick. An even hotter one.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be rad? See, that would give Brian more motivation, because I like you know, he's essentially just one of the side characters now, but I don't think he should be, because it started with him.
It did start with him,
you know, and they quickly found out that Diesel was really what people cared about, because how many quarter miles at a time does he live his life?
I think just a quarter mile at a time.
One.
Yeah.
One quarter mile at a time. Right. That's how he lives his life. Yeah. And people were drawn to that. It made it a richer experience.
That was the same thing with Swayze in Break, though. In the original.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, okay, now say they made 7 Point Break movies.
Oh, my God.
Say they made 7 of those.
At what point does War Child become a good guy?
Pretty quickly, I think.
Okay.
I think they would bring back War Child just to be one of the guys. But... what you're saying is, like, let's take Keanu, because it's very, you know, the dichotomy is mm-hmm. there. It's the same thing. It's the same right. archetypes. And then by, like...
They'd have to kill Lori Petty off pretty soon.
Yeah, right? You'd have to. Gosh. Yeah, really quick. but by the time you roll around to the movies where they start getting fun again, you're like, Keanu Reeves is just here as support for Swayze now.
Yeah.
He's just Swayze support.
That happens.
And I'm not saying Paul Walker is anywhere close to the level of
stellar
actor like Keanu Reeves.
Think of the third one where you didn't have either of the two real mains.
Oh, I've seen the third one.
The third one is almost like its own bizarre.
Have you seen the third one?
No, I have not. But I mean, it really.
You know how bizarre it is then.
You're talking about characters we haven't even seen in the rest of the proper series yet.
I spoke to some people and they all agreed with me. Lucas Black's got to be in the seventh one now. He's got to be in it.
Of course.
He's got to be there, because in the end of the third one.
You said this, yeah.
Well, but what I forgot to mention was, not only does he show up and roll down his window and say he wants to race, he says this line, and this, and you got to think about this. What could this mean now? What could this mean now? Mm-hmm. He said, "I got all the time in the world." He's like, "You got the time to race or something?" He's like, "I got all the time in the world."
That's what VD says.
That's what VD says. So we got to think now. The reason, there's got to be some reasons why he's got all the time in the world, because he's suddenly got family to worry about again, right?
Kind of, but I think he knows that he's free now.
Is anyone else there with him, or does he go to Japan alone? Does he go to Tokyo alone?
These questions are going to have to be answered.
All right.
And what if they do a comic to kind of smooth all this out as like interstitial, which they do with a lot of things, like the Star Trek comic that's around now. It's continuing the story from Star Trek.
I don't know that the basic fan base for the Fast and Furious movie can even read.
Oh, that's our fan base, man.
I'm saying that with...
We love, all due respect.
You know, it's a term of endearment right. to me.
It's a richer experience.
To think of them as
illiterate.
Illiterates.
Right.
I love them. I love the movies. They're great.
Yeah, you do. You love them.
All right, go on with whatever. What movie are we talking about?
Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3. That was a good one.
Yes. It was fun.
One. That was a good one.
It was like, what, 2 parts Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and 3 parts
Iron Man 1? No.
It had set at Christmas, voiceover narration, Robert Downey Jr.
The set at Christmas was forced and stupid.
It was pretty dumb, but also not important enough for you to feel like too bothered by it.
It didn't need to be.
It didn't.
It actually felt totally out of place.
It does in almost all of his movies, though.
Because there's Christmassy stuff going on.
It doesn't matter really, and in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, it doesn't matter at all. Like really.
Did he write? He wrote Last Action Hero, right? Who directed Last Action Hero?
John McTiernan directed it.
You sure Shane Black didn't write it?
It's possibly he did.
We wrote Last Boy Scout. Last Boy Scout was at Christmas because there's Santa Claus in it.
That's right.
Talk about Iron Man 3.
Loosely borrowing from the Warren Ellis's Extremis storyline, which I haven't read, so I imagine that it's actually fairly loose, because the whole idea of the Extremis program or whatever, some kind of material thing that they use in sort of a strange way to create weapons out of people and all this other stuff, introduces the Mandarin character and plays with that in a way that is kind of surprising, but ultimately I think satisfying because of the angle it plays and other things.
Yeah, Shane Black.
Oh, he did?
And William Goldman had an uncredited swipe at it, apparently.
Oh, that's not too bad. I'd like that. So Shane Black did do Last Action Hero.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's not a Christmas.
No, it's true. Not everything's a Christmas.
And he was in Predator, and that's not set in Christmas.
That's true. He was in Predator, which I always thought was weird.
I wonder if he wrote the joke he says in it.
I mean, the vagina joke? Yeah. The echo joke?
Yeah.
I imagine, but maybe not.
I don't think there's much improv in those movies.
And he's reading a comic book, and he actually likes... He's really into comics, apparently,
yeah.
Shane Black.
Yeah.
He's been trying to do the Death Note as a movie for a while. I think he might do it now. He might get to do whatever he wants now that he's made his $1 million comic book movie.
So, here's what's important in these movies at this point.
In the Marvel movies or in the Iron Man movies?
In the Marvel movies, specifically. Because the first Iron Man... It was so subpar in the villain area, and the conflict area, but it was so strong in the character area.
Oh yeah, and even
it set the way that all of these should go, and the better ones have gone. I think Thor was the strong points of Thor were A, his character, and B, the amazing Technicolor dream coat world he lived in, which I liked. The stuff on Earth, I think I mentioned, I didn't like as much. I didn't like Portman. But you know, and we've argued about Captain America. I didn't like that characterization wasn't there in Captain America. And Iron Man 2, even though it has him in it, which kind of carries stuff, they fall off the deep end with the, like... I mean, what was that about? What was that doing with his character furthering? There was some stuff about his dad.
They didn't want... It was weird because they didn't really want to get into the alcoholism thing, so they kind of obfuscated it by doing this, like, blood poisoning from palladium, like, death sentence-y stuff, which I felt there was good stuff there, but you're right. Ultimately, that movie doesn't have a lot. You remember a scene in, like, Monte Carlo with a race, and then you remember the big, you know, Flushing Meadows or whatever, the Expo... And then, like, a really stupid scene where he invents a new element, like, in his garage in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, ultimately, it's a weak point. I can say, to my own fault as a comic book nerd or whatever else it is, that I have enjoyed pretty much all of the core Marvel movies. I enjoyed The Incredible Hulk, Iron Man.
Captain America sucks.
I think Captain America, I loved it. But we've had our discussion about that. And I think the second one will be where we see more of this character stuff you'd rather want from that. But...
I hope so.
Well, it's going to be the Winter Soldier. It's going to be much darker. Not that makes it good, just that I think it will fit better. Captain America will now be the bright boy from the 40s now in the dark and dingy 21st century. But yeah, there wasn't much to it. And
maybe that's what's missing, is that should be mined for humor. And the characters, Stark and Thor... The strength of their personalities is mined for humor,
right?
And since Captain America has no personality, it's set in the time he's from.
Yeah,
there's nothing to mine.
That's pretty much.
But they mined it in the Avengers film,
a little bit,
but enough that he was interesting.
I don't think that made him interesting. I think that he had a couple of jokes and, like, I got that reference.
I think he did,
and that was about all he did.
And he did some awesome stuff. He did some really awesome stuff. And the Captain America movie. He didn't do anything except for, like, you know, he just ran around. But he did that crazy stuff on the helicarrier.
There was some cool stuff.
He was awesome. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I could rewatch movies at some point. But, so now you're into the third one, and you're right. I mean, what he does, you got a zillion suits, and you establish, you know, that he's got remote abilities, and then you raise things up. And I mean, the things I thought worked the best for Iron Man 3... What Black did was, by establishing this, like, terrorist threat on the United States specifically and everything. Yeah. They quickly addressed the whole, especially in a post-Avengers movie, the whole idea of like this is not a situation that we go to superheroes to deal with. This is a situation that the United States of America has to address.
That was very strong.
I mean, it was strong, but it was quick, too. It was like, okay, we addressed it and we got over it. Why doesn't Captain America and Thor just come down and use their special powers and everything else?
I appreciated that they went back to the strength of his personality.
Absolutely.
And he's very grating and annoying with most people. And his interplay with that kid. The second act of the film was very odd for any of these. And I think...
Oh, there's no Iron Man in it at all.
Yeah, and
all
I think it's odd in a good way. It's him going off to do some detective work in Tennessee.
Yeah.
We're really strange. And then weird stuff happens with him and the girl with the burned up face and the bad guy who was like the second in command guy who's like the tough fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end, I think they made what's his name, Pierce, a pretty effective villain.
And
when it came down to it, the villainy being more interesting, that character being more interesting, having a lot more humor in it. Just put it so much higher than the second one. I don't know if it was on the first one.
The first one was unexpectedly good.
It was unexpectedly good. It's still an origin story. It still has to struggle through things like that. And it had a lame bad guy thing. By the end, they just kind of were like, well, let's make up a bad guy. Boom, here's a bad guy. It's the guy who...
Betrayal and blah, blah, blah.
And they just threw it out there because they have to have a third act. And the third act is he has to fight something. Suddenly he's going to fight this guy who... We never knew it was going to...
Iron Man's always been a tricky storyline. I mean, as I'm reading more of the comics, reading some of Matt Fraction stuff, it does seem like there's only certain... I mean, there's an interesting character there, but I think the best stuff is when it's more about Stark. It's almost like, for me, sometimes... I mean, Iron Man's analog in the DC Universe is Batman, which is why I think this, you know, that it's good that you start with both those stories if you're going to start expanding them out. And I feel like maybe it's possible that DC will actually be able to do Justice League because they started with Batman. Everyone's like, I don't know, this Nolan Batman is so... It would never fit. And it's like, well, it won't unless the next thing they do is what they're going to do with Man of Steel. And so we'll see what happens there, you know?
I think the issue... I mean, if they stop with Iron Man 3, great. And then just go into the other stuff.
That was the problem. The third act has some weirdness to
it. Because he's got... I mean, we've talked about... villains sucking in most things that aren't Batman or like the X-Men, right?
Right.
So they've already kind of gone through. I mean, he's got lame villains. He's got stupid villains to start with. They've already gone through these storylines with things. His strength being his personality. It is good to have him in the Avengers group. The Avengers movies have such a great potential because the interplay between these characters is going to hold up even the crappiest plots.
Right.
Because, you know, he's that character is meant to butt heads with people, you know, and they've done a good job of having his surrounding core in the Iron Man movies be there with Happy and with Pepper. And I didn't like the stuff they did with Pepper in this film. By the end of it, I was okay. But, and I appreciate that they're, you know, they took a character who was there as a foil for him and then made her an integral part of the plot. And then, but by the end, to give her like crazy psychotic superpowers, and then take them away, felt kind of a little cheap.
That was also rushed too. Yeah,
very rushed. Yeah,
I guess is a whole B plot that got cut with him getting surgery to get the chunks of his heart fixed and everything.
I appreciated that. I had fun with that. One thing I did like that I normally wouldn't like in a film, because I know this is part of his longer series now, you had the running thing about him having nightmares about the Avengers experience.
Right.
And he's having these panic attacks and stuff, and they don't resolve that.
No.
That's great.
That's great. I liked every time they did that, because to me that kept grounding, like, this is the human in the group. This is the guy with no superpowers, and he's actually...
Yeah.
Dealing with this shit in a way that's like really frightening. Like, I'm just a smart guy that could make stuff, and when I was in a threatening situation, I did that and I survived. But then other stuff just kept going. Like when that little kid creepily goes, like, what was that on the other side of the wormhole? And he loses his shit. Yeah. And then when the other kid's asking him questions and he does too, I'm like, that's good. I mean, it's hard for actors to do that, and Downey does a pretty decent job. It's hard to do, like, losing your shit and not have it feel like, you know, like overwrought Shakespeare stuff or something. Right. But right. I did, like you said, they addressed it and he kind of got over it when it needed to. But like, that's the kind of stuff you don't just get over. And that's the kind of stuff that they, when they do do it in actual comics, which they don't do enough, is good. I mean, like let's like deal with the fact, like, how do these characters?
You just said something about people going to Shakespearean with the stuff. Do you think that during the filming of Thor, every time Brana had an actor do something he didn't like, you think the producers had to hold him back while he went, well, I'll just play the character instead. So here, and they're like, no. No, I'll just play this role. I'll just pop in and just, you know, I'll show you.
It was funny.
That would be funny.
I just love the fact that he did something like that.
That is weird, yeah.
I forget who's doing the second one. It's some other name that like has done something, but nothing too huge.
They offered him, and he said no. I'm kind of surprised they offered him, because I'm not sure how good a action movie director he is. There was cool looking stuff in that, but I mean, the action itself wasn't a main part of that film.
It wasn't really, but it was an interesting movie for him to do. But yeah, so ultimately, I feel like, and then the big reveal spoiler, because now it's been out for a while, is. In order to, the Mandarin is like a mainstay. He's the Joker to Iron Man, right. And the way that they've manipulated and used him in the Marvel universe is as this kind of guy that runs like a high like a major Asian crime syndicate. He's got these magic rings, all this other stuff. Maybe when they started him a million years ago, he was this ostensibly goofy character. Because I mean, hell, they're comic books.
I don't think he ever was.
But they've gotten him to the point where like he'll deal with Wolverine at one point if Wolverine ends up in Japan, and they'll run afoul of each other and stuff.
Well, but they've majorly changed him in the whole way the Marvel universe works in. Probably some time now, just because of the racist implications of the characters.
They
downplayed him quite a bit. So when I first heard that they were going to be bringing the Mandarin into it, I was like, oh, they're going to totally dumb it down in some way. And you know, they did all the safe things with it, you know, because it could have been Ben Kingsley, and it could have been everything they did. And then that ends up being a big joke, which is actually really good, and it played really well. He was fantastic.
Yeah,
he was fantastic in that. Yeah.
He had a lot of
fun. Some Cockney street actor who, the way he kept telling them all the terrible things he did, like he insinuated that they found him, you know, sucking dick in the street. You know? Like, oh, I've done terrible things to keep the high going, you know, and how they gave him a boat and like,
yeah. No, it's pretty out there. You talk about like the villain stuff. I feel like. And you get that in these comic book movie things. Sometimes it's like the ultimately it was like, so he wanted control and power of both sides to further his evil agenda.
It was dumb.
Yeah, the Guy Pearce thing. Like ultimately,
but you know what? Guy Pearce is a better villain actor.
Oh sure, absolutely.
Than either of the last two. You know,
Mickey Rourke or Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges is a fantastic actor.
No, he's good.
But the bad guy in something. I mean, he's growly and kind of mean.
He was good as Stain, but not good as the third bad guy.
And Rourke. I mean, I've now seen him in that and Immortals.
Immortals, yeah.
And he plays it just like he does, except without the terrible Russian accent. He's just so bland, Like him and Jeff Bridges are interesting. Like they chose them to be the villains in those first two. Was that they do so much acting with their voice, and they both have these low, gravelly voices that can be mistaken for bad guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you just can't see either of them as that. I mean, Mickey Rourke, he should have won an Oscar for Harley Davidson The Marlboro Man. That's real acting.
That's good stuff. Yeah, making that's us believe acting. That Crystal Dream is really a threat. No, I hear you.
The Burbank Airport, man.
Yeah. The Burbank Airport. If there were any problems with Iron Man 3, I felt, and they were relatively minimal, it was just the like insane amount of the suits towards the end, where it was just switching back and forth. It was kind of like an engaging, like
it was, and I think it made for so much more.
You talk about the Rube Goldberg thing, yeah. And the whole like,
yeah, it was because the you know, yeah, I thought that was great. I thought that was a great addition, and the fact that they were able to do that with like. And they had bits of humor in that as well.
Oh, yeah.
When that suit that he had been in the whole movie that he's been trying to fix finally comes back to him and he gets in, it just falls to crap because he hits a pole or something.
After he saves all the people, he flies right into a truck and a truck hits him.
Yeah, but he had gotten it powered back up and whatever.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, he's like, oh yeah, it's like the prodigal son returns.
Uh-huh.
And he jumps up and parts of it go on him and then it like falls to pieces again and he's just like. They had a lot of stuff for humor in that. And the way they've done these things with the suits now is kind of cool. Like the way he was able to order the suit to protect Pepper when the house was being fired upon.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
That was pretty rad.
I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to. But it's just at a certain point, the suit can become so much of a deus machina caveat thing. Mm-hmm. But with his character and everything, they always kind of played it and made it. Work so it was like he figured it out.
And a major theme in this movie was that the suit was like a defense mechanism for him and tooling with them and making more and more of them. It was like he's building them to protect himself from all these things he's afraid of. You know? And so they did a good job of it.
Yeah, by forcing him to not have one and be out there with a hat and a handgun solving things and dealing with doing as best as he can against forces that can do more against him than anything else. Yeah, so in that sense, I mean, it was nice that the third one was, like I said, a step up from the second one, and especially coming off of the Avengers, like could they do a movie that would stand alone and still be compelling?
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
And it did.
Yeah.
It looks like Thor 2 will be another sort of big, but Thor's got
to
be big.
It has
in
be.
Avengers-esque, like.
Because it's going to deal with cosmic stuff.
It's going to deal with cosmic, and it's going to... Which then makes you just feel like, well, then isn't the cosmic threat that's going to be the Avengers 2 going to be sort of the same level?
We'll see. They'll deal with it. I mean, at this point, it looks like they have their think tanks working all that stuff.
Yeah, they seem to make it work. I'm a little... You mentioned having a lot of characters and stuff. I'm a little trepidatious about the inclusion of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver into the Avengers. It's going to be a lot more characters now. I don't know if that just means that's going to mean less... less of other people, and which is maybe okay, but I don't know. My complaint about the first one was that I didn't get enough little character moments that would have taken up very little more time in it. So we'll see. I mean, I've never really read the Avengers comics. I know that I know those characters more from the Marvel comics and their inclusion in in that. Scarlet Witch was almost always only an Avenger, but Quicksilver was part of X-Factor and.
Yeah.
Other things, but that will be. I mean, I was thinking about that today because, like, the problem is still that Fox is going to go ahead and make a movie, whether they got a story or not, to keep Spider-Man and X-Men in their thing. Right? Fox owns those, and Marvel just owns all the rest, which means Disney. So that you're never going to see Wolverine and the Avengers until either a major deal is brokered between the two studios or a major buyout happens from Fox.
Right?
Isn't that basically how it goes? So that's another situation. It might be for the best because it might just be too many goddamn comic book characters that they'd all try to put them all into one big event movie or something, or do like a movie. Pretty soon though, these movies will come out like comic books, and there'll be one every month to just continue a giant story.
You oversaturate a market. And
it becomes a problem. But they've been saying that for years. They've been saying the comic book movies have been... I mean, remember Vaughn was saying that when Kick-Ass 1 was just coming out. He was like, the comic book movies are on their way out. They're dead. And that was before Avengers and a lot of other things. So,
But these movies, the difference between the tentpole stuff and who's going to keep wanting to see things like... I mean, how interested are people going to be for when they redo Daredevil or when they redo, whatever else? I'm not sure what Guardians of the Galaxy is going to garner popularity-wise.
Yeah, that's part of the second phase, right? All post-Avengers 2, I think, is going to all be another realm of comic book movies that like Ant-Man and stuff. I mean, from my perspective, it all comes down
to... They're giving
to
it to, like,
creative
to like
people.
Comedy
like,
directors and stuff, I mean, James Gunn is doing...
Edgar Wright's going to do Ant-Man, maybe, or eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get good people doing the material the right way, then it can make a good movie. Whether or not it'll make $1 zillion, who knows? I mean, that's questionable. But, yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the new X-Men movie. That sounds like they're going to... At least they're going to have a lot of people involved in it. It could be an interesting story. I'm just glad that they're going to keep going with X-Men after three. I don't know what they're going to do. If they're going to use the time travel thing to kind of halfway write out events of three or correct events from three or what.
Just the inclusion of, I mean, you got a moneymaker in Jackman as Wolverine because it's just been proven to happen. I don't think that X-Men Origins Wolverine made a ton of money, but it made enough.
It was also not really very, I mean,
it wasn't a good movie.
It wasn't good, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that he was bad in it.
No, he's always been pretty good as that character.
He's got the anger and he looks the part even though he doesn't actually look the part. You know what I mean? Like if you're gonna cast a human actor as Wolverine, mm-hmm. you can't do Danny DeVito.
No,
you have to do somebody who looks like him. So I'm hoping that second movie is good.
But that trailer
sucked so
that
bad.
That trailer for that second movie looks like.
But I would have had no problem with that recent X-Men film being part of a different continuation or universe or whatever.
Origins, you mean?
Yeah.
I thought it was long time.
And then you include him in it.
Yeah.
That just makes it, it was a funny moment, but it makes it problematic for me.
Now they're linking it. Yeah. Straight up. Like, Professor Xavier from past and present.
That first series went so downhill in a hurry. And you give the reins of something to Brett Ratner.
Yeah.
And it just turns into a fiasco where you just read it. I don't know what they were planning on doing more.
It really felt like they were planning on not doing more.
You kill off Cyclops unceremoniously. Off you don't even show it.
Yeah, that was odd. That was odd from the get-go because the problem... I like James Marsden, but casting him and then casting Famke Janssen as Jean was immediately like... there was no good chemistry there. And the age difference was apparent. It was, yeah. She was more
because she should have good chemistry with anyone. She really should, but he was way too young looking for her. I don't even think he's that young anymore.
He's 6 years younger than her, and he always has been because that's the way life works. And it seemed like they never really took his character seriously, other than to just be like he's the character that's like the rival kind of gets on Wolverine's
nerves. Wolverine, yeah,
right, and so that was. That was a problem, I think, with making... Because the problem is, X-Men movies have to be this ensemble things. When they work best, they work as an ensemble, mm-hmm. where, almost like the Furious Six or something, like every character gets a little something to do.
Can you not bring up Furious Six every time we're trying to talk about another movie?
Okay. I'm sorry. And the problem is that, I mean, his character, Summers, has become, like, has always been kind of a big one. I mean, Whedon and even Morrison did a lot with him. In their runs,
I've never liked Cyclops. I've never liked the
character. A lot of people don't really like him, but he's a
de facto leader. He's a whiny, plain Jane bitch. And now they've made him go overboard in the whole.
They've had the overboard stuff happen for a while. They've been leaning towards that, especially.
Wolverine has always been more interesting, and the issue with the X-Men is when you brought him into the fold, everyone else became less interesting. The original X-Men was an interesting idea, but it was a bunch of lame guys for the most part.
Right.
The coolest X-Men are like Wolverine and Nightcrawler, and I'm not a Gambit guy, but I mean like the people with like interesting personalities are the ones that people always liked.
Oh sure.
I don't know anyone who's a huge Cyclops fan.
I always kind of like...
Gambit came out, everybody loved Gambit.
Yeah, I never liked Gambit.
Love Gambit.
I always liked Cyclops because there was this two things they were doing with him. There was the like...
Two?
He's trying to hold this crazy disparate group together. He's kind of got to be like the stern one. He's got this girlfriend that can read minds and's way more powerful than him. And
she's an interesting character.
And she's interesting. And then he's got the
Storm
brother.
And Cyclops are not interesting. Havok is interesting enough because he was like a bad guy off and on and stuff in the comics.
There was concerns. But then you also have this idea about Mr. Sinister and all the and Apocalypse manipulating Summers and his bloodline. Right. And that was where, to me, I was compelled by it. But you're right. I think they never quite got him right for a lot of times. And then they kind of did put him in a weird place. And once he started banging Emma Frost, I was kind of like, God damn it.
Emma Frost is hot, though.
Well, but if you had to choose between Emma Frost and Jean...
Emma Frost.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Absolutely. It's a bad girl.
No way, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Easy.
You go Emma Frost, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
You'd probably go Jubilee, you pedophile.
No. She's in the new X-Men book that Brian Wood's working on. It's all chicks. It's all chick X-Men.
Gosh, I sure love those X-Men that just make plasma come out.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why she's even still around as a character, to be honest, because she's never been that interesting or that good. And then they decided, Rogue has become a major X-Men character, right. And I never found her all that interesting, but for some reason...
Rogue hasn't become a major X-Men character. Rogue was always a major X-Men character. The stuff that I read in the early 90s was just Rogue.
No, not in the early 90s. Rogue. She was there, but like she wasn't as involved.
Everything I remember was all about her.
The early 90s stuff was good, had some good bits because like it sort of had its core characters, and it knew that like Wolverine was a major one, so it would use him in major and awesome ways, but he wasn't in everything. Wolverine now, one of the reasons like I'd love to be reading X-Men if it were like, hey, get these two books and you get some of the good core characters. It's so freaking splayed out right now. And like I said, they just reintroduced the book that's just called X-Men. And the gimmick on this book is that it's all female. It's a female team, and who knows what their basis is. Are they at the school? But that's where Wolverine is. But Wolverine's also the Savage Wolverine. But he also was leading this X-Force group. And it's like... And he's also an Avenger. And
it's the same problem with all the DC stuff about the popular characters. You get too many books.
You get too many books, for sure. And I mean, we talked about Batman. And I think other than Batman's use in Justice League, which is always kind of hard to reconcile, unless a good writer does it right... Batman's within his own books are almost always like those books are always fairly standalone. Like you read Detective, there's a story that goes through Detective, and that's it. Every now and again, there's
but that's stupid. Why does the other story stuff exist? Because it's in the same universe.
That's true. Sometimes those books can concur, but usually it's happening.
Are we led to believe that he's actually working on three cases at the same
sometimes,
time at any given time?
Sometimes they do
but
that.
But he does never mention them to himself or anyone
and
else.
And sometimes they do that. They mention, like, you know, Alfred was always the one that throws that in. He's like, sir, do you really think you should be so concerned with this when, you know, Talia al Ghul is out poisoning the city? there's problems with that. In a perfect world, I would almost prefer that all the big books...
Just do one.
Just be like the Image books, where and pretty much, other than the occasional maybe every year or two crossover, that's a thin crossover, that's not every single book in the world or whatever, you could just read that one book and get the main stuff. Now, truth be told, at least with Batman, for most of the time I've read it, sure, there's some good stuff in Detective, and there's some good stuff in maybe like one or two of the other Bat books. But the main Batman book to read, and the guy who ends up being the one that kind of guides and moves the Batman story, controls like, you know, the main Batman story, other than like the editors and everything else, is the guy that writes Batman. Right. So when Grant Morrison started writing the Batman book that's called Batman, it was kind of like, okay, Paul Dini's doing Detective, he's doing these little detective stories, and they kind of complement what Morrison's doing. But then Morrison's writing Batman, and then he's writing, Final Crisis. And his use of Batman in Final Crisis is actually really good, because he's hardly in it. But when he is used, he's used in a way that then works with the RIP story.
That's the way Batman should be used in that bigger stuff.
Oh, absolutely, no.
He shouldn't be in it that much. He should pop in the way a creepy guy who hangs out in the shadows would pop in to do what he can when he can.
Yeah, exactly. Or the fact that they just sort of play on the fact that he's like this, you know... His superpower is that he's Bruce Wayne. That's where Morrison gets Batman right. That's where Morrison makes Batman awesome. But yeah, the X-Men books, it just frustrates the hell out of me. Because in the 90s, I was reading two books. There was Uncanny X-Men and X-Men. And they each had a different team, sort of. So there was a little cross-contamination. But that's where those characters were. And sure, Wolverine had his own Wolverine
fine.
Book.
If you have separate teams in those things, then that's perfectly fine. Because there's that many X-Men.
Yeah,
there's
right.
tons
it's,
of them.
It,
right?
It's totally
So they
cool.
could have as many books as they want, as long as they don't screw that sort of thing up. But you're right about that Wolverine thing. It's like, you put him in three of his own series, and then also some other stuff, and then also in this second X-Men book
and
or whatever.
The character has no consistency.
Right.
And everything about the X-Men is just kind of... just falling apart. Like, I don't know what the fuck they're about anymore. I mean, it's one thing to have them shift and end up on an island outside of San Francisco after M-Day and all this other really dreary shit happens, and it's like, okay. But eventually you kind of always hope you always kind of want them to end up back, and maybe it's because that's the way it was when I was reading it, and that's the way it was when it first existed, you know, when Stan Lee created it.
back in Westchester.
Yeah, just, you always wanted to end up back at Westchester with this idea that there's some kind of a school, yeah. There's some kind of academy, and like that's and there's a core group, and then if there is another book with other mutants, like they're doing their own thing on kind of a side take, and if there's cross contamination, that's fine. But for the most part, like that's the book to read if you want to be interested in these stories about this group of characters. Fuck, I just can't do it. And then you got Bendis or a couple of these other guys, and they're just writing four X-Men books at once, and some of them are coming out every 2 weeks, and it's like I don't know what's happening. I don't know if they're good or not. And then they do the time travel caveat stuff, because there's the all new X-Men book that's just told from the perspective of the original X-Men brought into the present. Mm-hmm. So like, whatever that's supposed to do. I don't know. It frustrates me. It frustrates me because I'd love to read one or two. I mean, I read almost no Marvel books now. I read Captain Marvel and I read Hawkeye, which I haven't even started reading yet. But I like that those are at least standalone character books written by good authors that are married, actually. The two authors are married.
Gay married?
No. See, that's sexism on your part. You assume that the author of the Captain Marvel book is a man. Why?
I was thinking they were both women.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
Now who's sexist?
Now it's me. Huh? Now it's me. You got
now
me.
Who's
I know. You got me. Man.
Yeah, The Rock in Furious 6 was kind of sexist. At one point, Gina Carano says something, and he says, woman, something, something,
he says
something.
Woman a bunch to her. He's always like, you think, woman?
You think a cop would deal with that?
I don't
would deal with
understand
The Rock calling her
that
woman?
Interaction at all, to be honest. I thought that was...
He didn't even look like he wanted to bang her once.
I don't think he did. I think that was the point. He kept it professional.
You think The Rock is gay in those movies?
In those movies? I don't know.
In those movies.
I don't know. That would be an interesting character arc.
Oh, man. I love The Rock. What's funny is that
he elevates everything.
I keep waiting for him to be a better actor, and it just hasn't happened.
Well, he's
really not a good actor.
He hasn't been
I love the guy, and I love the things he's in for the most part. I think it's very enjoyable to watch him do that stuff. But he's just got the one thing that he does.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's too bad that there just haven't been like a lot of good action movies that he was in. Because like The Rundown is good, and The Walking Tall remake is good.
And he's good. The same character.
He's good in those. Yeah, but I mean, like, just like with Arnold or something, if you do enough of them, eventually there can be a little bit of depth, but also it's just fun, and they get better at them. And it's like, okay, that's cool. I mean, it's not like I want to see The Rock play, like, some guy that's dying.
Best Arnold acting, go. Name that movie, go.
The best Arnold acting?
Yes, go, 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 go.
I'm partial to Kindergarten Cop.
Kindergarten Cop is exactly right. That's exactly right.
Because I honestly... It does move me.
It's got nuance to it.
It does move me just a little bit when he talks, when he, the kid wants him to read the book, and he talks about how he used to read it to his son.
Yeah, he's good in it. He's good. He actually is good.
And I would say that,
The second one obviously is The Sixth Day.
No, the second one to me is probably True Lies. I think him and Cameron, like, really were on the same page about what they were doing with that character and with that movie, and that was good. But yeah,
it's easily Kindergarten Cop. I'm glad you said that. Last Action Hero, they give him more to deal with. Also, he's
that's true.
He's very bewildered, and you don't get movies in which he's bewildered. So
he ends up in the real world, yeah. and he gets shot.
That's what I'm saying. You give him that to deal with, and suddenly he has to he's rediscovering the world like a child.
Yeah,
and it's that's interesting too.
When he hears Mozart, yeah. The one who practiced guild. I love it. I own Last Action Hero.
Everybody owns Last Action Hero. It doesn't make you special.
There's not an ounce of irony in my enjoyment for Last Action Hero.
There shouldn't be. It's a great movie.
No, I saw it in the theater. Me and John Robbins were the only two people in the theater to see it.
But all the people who didn't see it that day feel foolish now.
Oh, but they do. I hope most people feel foolish about it.
How long is this going to go?
I don't know. How much longer do you
want? You should have ended a long
time.
Iron
Man 3.
Iron Man 3. Oh, yeah. What do you give it?
I give it...
I'm going to retcon my previous rankings of the films to make this one work.
Okay. Weird. I'm not ranking it like Steve. Like you asked, I'm not going to rank it relative to the other ones as so much as
you don't, have to. I'm just retconning them based on this.
I probably give it a strong 3.5 out of 5. Well, you know,
I'm thinking I gave the first one 3.5 out of 5. I might have given it 4.
I would give the first one 4.
I don't think I want to give it 4.
I think I like the first one still a little more than
I think
this
one. I do also. But I think I want to say that this one is a 3, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I think this is a good 3.
A strong 3? And you think Iron Man 1 is a 3.5?
I think Iron Man 1 is a 3.5, and this is a strong 3.
And 2 is
but at this point, I kind of prefer this film. Yeah, 2 is a 2, yeah. 2 is a 2.
Well, there you go.
Maybe even less than a 2, maybe 1.5. I think I was really disappointed.
Yeah, you were pretty disappointed.